Welcome to the Sounds of Success, brought to you by the National Association of Professional Martial Artists. This audio magazine is a tool for generating profitable ideas and for taking your business to new levels of excellence and performance. Here you'll find real-life case studies of school owners just like you who have applied our proven successful business and marketing principles to their school and are creating the business of their dreams as a result.
Let's take the worst case scenario and then talk about what we're trying to create. First case scenario is, you know, an instructor on the floor who only teaches, and the salesperson as a program director who only sells, and they're completely compartmentalized and separated from each other. Therefore, the instructor never thinks about renewals or upgrades on the floor, and the salesperson never thinks about instruction. So that's like a very unproductive relationship inside a martial arts school. The most productive relationship is when they're intimately connected and the program director knows on a day-to-day basis what is happening in the classroom to help facilitate enrollments and renewals. And the instructor knows on the floor what has to happen in the class to facilitate enrollments and renewals. So that's kind of the topic today. So I guess the jumping off point is, number one, Master Brown, why don't you just give us a quick overview of, in the Maha Karate system, in your system, how that works, the working relationship between a chief instructor and a program director?
Well, really what it's got to be is between the chief instructor and the program director, they have to be interchangeable. Mm-hmm. What I mean by that is the chief instructor should easily be able to step over into the program director's side or role, be able to be familiar enough to do all the responsibilities and jobs that the program director does, and vice versa. The program director needs to be able to teach, understand the floor systems, the upgrade, retention, and renewal. Obviously, when it comes to the floor and having the end result being quality black belts, the school really boils down to three things, and that's retention, renewal, and enrollments. So both people should be intimately familiar on how to increase retention, have people stay around forever. How to renew them and have them set their goals. And renewing doesn't always mean the upgrade cycle, but it has them to renew their values, their enthusiasm in training and staying with the school and supporting the school. And then enrollments as well. They both should be working diligently on enrollments. And the way they work on enrollments, obviously the way a chief instructor is on the floor, who's primarily on the floor, the way that they facilitate enrollment is going to be a little bit different than the way the program director does it. Same thing with the way they start the retention cycle, the same way they start the enrollment cycle. They're all going to be a little bit different, but they need to be interchangeable.
Yeah, definitely not the compartmentalization that we see in a lot of schools, where the guy on the floor doesn't really know what the guy in the room is doing, and the guy in the room doesn't really care or want to know what the instructor is teaching. And that's a very counterproductive way to operate. Okay, so let's expand on that a little bit. So In your estimation, and in the model that you're operating at on a national basis now, the roles are interchangeable. Now, obviously, we don't want to confuse anyone. It doesn't have to be that the guy that's the program director is teaching every day in the class or anything like that. I mean, it's that role and that relationship is up to individual interpretation. But the guy that's on the floor teaching has to intimately know what the sales process is. He has to know what the intro looks like, what the second intro looks like, what the enrollment conference looks like, what the renewal conference looks like, and all the steps there in between. So give us a little bit of a perspective on that, Master Brown. If I'm an instructor, I'm a chief instructor in a school, let's say. Let me say this first. The quotation that we always use on this is, quote, unquote, selling is everybody's job. Quote, unquote, marketing is everybody's job. So the guy on the floor can't think that he's not in a sales role. Everyone in a school is in a sales role. When you're teaching a student what the values of martial arts are, what the values of setting a goal is, that's a sales process. You're persuading that person to believe the way you believe. And we all believe very deeply that learning to set goals and learning to overcome the obstacles is a very important skill set. So it's up to us as, leaders in the classroom to persuade that student that we're right. So tell us a little bit about that. If you're an instructor on the floor and you've got brand new white belt students, let's say it's a trial student who may or may not be who is not enrolled yet, and you're the instructor, how are you, you know, quote unquote, selling that person in an empathetic and instructor high integrity way to persuade them to believe what you believe is correct, that that they should really set a goal to become a black belt, and that's the best thing for them to do.
Well, truth be told, in this cycle that we're talking about, especially in the Mile High Karate system, the primary key salesperson is the instructor.
Exactly.
And the reason I say that is, use your scenario, the trial program. As the chief instructor, what I need to be doing is I need to sell the student, the trial student, on the fact that they are able or capable of doing the martial arts, that they are capable and able of achieving in the martial arts. I've got to sell, if it's a child, I've got to sell the parents on the benefits of the martial arts. And as a martial artist, and as everybody on the call being martial artists, we know the benefits. We know the confidence. We know the integrity you get from it, the athleticism, all the bells and whistles that go along with achieving a black belt. However, many people don't see that. And with our society being a me society and it's society, a lot of people don't have the patience to wait 4 years, 6 years, 10 years for that to happen. So what you've got, what an instructor's got to be able to do, or have to be able to do, is translate features into benefits. So the reason that you're going to attention, the reason you are bowing, that you're clearing the calculator, that you're getting your mind refocused, that you're showing respect, why it's important to show respect, what are proper ways to show respect. You're selling all that. You're selling the dream of becoming a black belt. As a child, there's many, 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 many children that would love to be black belts or dream about it or play play being a martial artist in some fashion, whether it's from a video game, movie, or television series. As the chief instructor, you've got to show them that they can be like that person. Plus, they can have all the qualities and attributes that the parents want them to have, or the school systems want them to have, or the admissions officer at the universities want them to have. So what you're doing is you're actually selling them the dream, which is a more difficult deal than trying to talk money, because you've got to show them that they can achieve it. And trying to talk somebody into something they can achieve is a pretty big feat upon itself.
Absolutely. So let's expand on that just a little bit more. What you said, I think, is very impactful. That there are really only two things that that instructor on the floor in the very early stages of that student's, you know, martial arts life have to be focused on. Number one, helping them understand that they can be competent and that they can be successful at what they're doing. And number two, translating the features of kicking and punching and standing at attention into the benefits that we really know that it's all about. So in the model that we talked about, you know, at the beginning, where they're completely disconnected and compartmentalized from each other with the instructor and the program director, think about how easy any of the members of the coaching program or Maximum Impact that are on the call that have staffs. Think about how easy it is for your staff members to forget what the focus of today is, right? Think about how easy it is for an instructor to forget that this is the student's second lesson in your school, and it needs to be the most exciting thing that they've ever done in their whole life, right? And it should be. And just think about how easy it is to get into a rut of teaching every day, right? Very simple, very easy to have that happen to you. And if that instructor on the floor isn't focused on those two goals, number one, helping that student feel competent by showing them how to accomplish something and how to overcome the goal to get there, or overcome the obstacle to get there. And number two, translating that accomplishment into the benefits that the parent wants to see. If he's not focused on those two things, now the guy that goes and enrolls the student and talks to the parent has to be a salesman, quote unquote. They have to be, you know, Tom Hopkins, Zig Ziglar, right? They have to, you know, bring out all the closes and bring out the Ben Franklin and bring out all these tools, which frankly, if you're using, you're doing all the other stuff wrong. Because by the time they get into the enrollment room, if the instructor on the floor has done those two things, then really all you need to do is figure out how to make financial arrangements, right? So let's expand on that. Give us some like rubber meets the road tools. If I'm an instructor on the floor and I have a student in his second lesson today, what specifically am I doing to help him feel competent? And what like phraseology would I use to help mom and dad understand why he's standing straight or why we're teaching him to do a certain thing? Give me a little nut and bolt on that.
We're going to have to take that from an abstract point of view and then go back to concrete.
Sure.
And that's the only way that's going to make sense. And what I mean by an abstract point of view is you're teaching the student, but you're speaking to the parent.
Right.
you are, and let me clarify that a little bit. What I mean by that, if you're having the student do the physical movements, as you explain to them why they're doing it martial arts, you need to make sure you're making eye contact and explain to the parents how that martial arts, whether it's a kick or a tension or ready position, seiza, whatever it is, how that can be useful in the real world. And sometimes it's not as apparent as you think it would be. So going to attention, it's, you know, well, I'm showing discipline. That's a point. It also is, you know, you're refocusing, whether you're working on a kata and you're going to sparring or sparring combinations, whatever. When you go to attention between those drills, what you're doing is the phrase I like is clearing the calculator. You're getting refocused. So pointing out those type of things to the parents, giving the child an opportunity to expand on their physical abilities without them realizing it. So holding the target shield at a level and letting them kick and gradually raising it, so they can kick higher than they thought they could. Not allowing them to set false expectations, and then turning to the parents and pointing out that your child can do more than they thought they could. Your child can, you know, achieve if they truly want to achieve. Having the parents get involved, having the parents coach and teaching the parents how to coach. What I mean by coach is how to give them positive reinforcement, how to support them. And when I say support them, support their child on the floor. And if you're dealing with adults, same thing. You show the adults, because as the older we get, the more we limit ourselves, show them that they don't have to necessarily limit themselves. Now, for safety reasons, we don't want them doing anything crazy. However, they can kick higher than they thought they could, or kick faster, or punch faster, or what have you.
Right.
Creating venues for them to shine. And in the beginner's levels, I mean, there's all types of skills and drills that you can do to make them see that they can accomplish, whether that's hitting a target before it hits the ground, creating some kind of a speed drill or endurance drill where they can actually do more than they think they can, disguising repetition so that we can have people do 100 consecutive kicks, but if you disguise repetition right, they won't realize they're doing it.
Right.
They won't give up doing it, and by the time you disclose it to them, when they need to do the other side, the skill set goes way up.
Yeah, absolutely. And the phrase, if we're talking really, really, really detailed nuts and bolts here, one of the pieces of phraseology that's extremely impactful to mom and dad is if you do exactly what you said. Number one, you're teaching Johnny in class, but you literally look up and make eye contact with mom sitting in the corner, and with all the parents sitting in the viewing area, and you say, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, I need you to go ahead and put the book down for a second because this is really important. I wanted to explain this to you. Johnny just tried to do a kick over here, and he just did a kick about as high as his chest is. Now, one of the things that Johnny is going to be accomplishing in the class very, very soon is in the Maha Karate system, we have many external requirements that the students have to do, and I'll leave that out for now so that I don't confuse anybody. But one of the things that we're going to be teaching a lot is I'll bet you didn't know this, but the average child, by the time they're 18 years old, hears the word no 148,000 times, which means, when you were 1 year old and you were walking over towards the electrical outlet with the car keys, mom said, no, right? And when you were reaching up to grab the hot pot of boiling water off the stove, she said no, right? So that's a gut instinct that parents have to protect their kids, is to teach them what their limitations are. Now, unfortunately, many times students never make the transition to exploring what their possibilities are. They only learn what their limitations are. So we had the best of intentions when we told Johnny no, but sometimes we don't have maybe the vocabulary, or sometimes we forget to remind them of what their possibilities are as well, and that's what we're going to do in martial arts for you. We're going to take Johnny, and we're going to show him that he can accomplish more than he ever thought he could in much less time, but also teach him a whole new skill set that are going to give him the tools to overcome the obstacles that he's going to have for the rest of his life. Now, Mom and Dad, wouldn't you feel that that'd be a valuable opportunity? And, who's going to say no to that, right? So that's a specific phrase. If you wanted some phraseology to go back into the classroom today and use, that, I think that's a great one. Master Brown, would you have anything to expand on that?
Well, I have to expand and kind of change directions. Part of being that instructor and understanding the sales from the floor is there's an ascension in being an instructor. And one is being a conveyor of information, just teaching the technique, teaching the lesson of the week, then I guess the next ascension from there would be being the motivator and motivating the people to want to come to class, to want to learn, to want to even bring in referrals. And I guess the last ascension from that is to be the one to inspire. And there's a huge difference between motivating and inspiring. And once the instructor gets to where they can inspire, you don't only, not only inspire the person on the floor, but you inspire the parents. And that's how the anecdotes, the stories, the character development, whether using it from a book or some of the great NAPMAS lessons. All those things, once you get the parents to where they put down the books voluntarily, where the parents have the pen and notepad because they want to take the notes, or they're writing in a training log, that's when you've inspired, and that's when the referrals come easy. That's when people want to come to class, and that's when your retention stays strong. That's when they are motivated to bring in referrals because you've inspired them. And as an instructor, the reason it's important to understand the sales process, because once you get to the point where you're inspiring students, they're going to bring friends into class. They're going to ask you if their friends can come to testing, and that's important for you to understand what the next step is so you and the program director can have a good working relationship so you can maximize on these opportunities.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's exactly the same thing, the same message. Let's take, half a step forward. So in many martial arts schools now, the typical snail cycle is a student comes in for an intro. They are, let's say an info call comes in, a student is scheduled for an intro appointment. They do their first intro, they're scheduled to come back for a second intro, they do their second lesson either on the floor in a group setting or another private lesson with the instructor. You know, either way, I think it's about a 50-50 split on that. And then at some point, either on that lesson or potentially at another visit, we're doing an enrollment conference with the students. So now some schools function on a little different of a cycle, and they have a two-week trial program that you can do, or a month trial program, things like that. What we've seen is the ratios are tightest if that trial program is the narrowest. So if it's lesson one, lesson two, intro on the third lesson, the ratios are typically a lot better than if it's 4-week trial, right?
Correct.
But that's another issue. But if I'm in that intro cycle and I'm the now I'm not the instructor on the floor, now I'm the program director, how am I cooperatively working with the instructor on the floor to identify, opportunities and challenges for the student, so that when I go into the sales room with the parent or with in the enrollment conference, I have the tools and ammunition and the specific opportunities for Johnny that I need. So how does that process manifest itself?
Well, there's a couple things, and there's a couple different ways you can look at it. But number one, as the program director, if I'm not teaching one of the introductory classes, that could be somewhat problematic. And the reason is you don't ever want to appear as the money person. That's a whole other conversation upon itself.
Yeah.
But the program director wants to make sure that they are building rapport and asking questions, finding out from mom and dad what they want to achieve out of martial arts, or why Johnny's in martial arts. And sometimes those are radically different things, why the student wants to be in the martial arts and why the parents put him in the martial arts. And one of the reasons they want to be asking those questions is now they can feed that information to the instructor. If the instructor is translating features into benefits and they're talking about becoming a straight-A student, but the child's already a straight-A student, that's not going to be a buying point for the parent. But if the kid's a straight-A student, but he's a little bit lazy every place else, talking about becoming motivated and how to be self-motivated, that becomes a hot buying point. So it's understanding what the parent or the student is trying to achieve out of martial arts. Knowing exactly what the instructor teaches and how they teach it is important for the program director. So when he starts talking to Johnny and says, do you want to be a black belt? Do you think it'd be cool if you could? He would already know what Johnny's learned or seen or been exposed to within that martial arts system. That way he could talk the talk with Johnny. Most schools have a student creed or a school pledge of some sort. Being able to talk that with Johnny and, again, translate the features into benefits, why we say that, what that means to you, and how you can apply those same, that same affirmation into your everyday life, whether it's athletics or academics or work environment. So being able to take what the instructor's teaching and reiterate it, and also to translate the features from benefits from a little different point of view or from a different vocabulary sometimes has a whole different meaning or a whole different impact on a person. And that's extremely important. It also gives you a sense of professionalism. If Mr. Milroy, you and I were at the school, and you translated a feature to a benefit, and I did the same thing, and they were pretty much the same message, maybe worded a little differently, what that shows is this isn't just a rote script, rote memorization that the instructor has, but it's something that really does work, and you and I said pretty much the same thing, but it's worded a little different because we're two different people. Now, that has an impact. And it's not one of the impacts that's blatant right there, but it's a subliminal impact that the parents see and notice and actually feel good about.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good point. It's definitely got to be something that's internalized, not just necessarily, you know, canned and scripted, although that's one tool to help with internalization. That's good. From another, you know, really, you know, rubber meets the road, nut and bolt standpoint, a tool that we've used on this for a long time is in intro one, identifying, and what you were describing a minute ago is, you know, wants, needs, and pain. And those are typically the three motivators for any human, you know, movement, right? It's something that they want, something that they perceive that they need, or solving a problem that they think they have. And in most of the cases, in our scenario, it's a pretty balanced mix. Some students come to the school because they have dramatic focus challenges. Some come to the school because the parents perceive that they have dramatic, you know, self-esteem or confidence issues. And in other cases, it's in probably 50-50. The other case, it's something that they've just developed an interest and a desire to do, and, you know, the parent wants to help facilitate that. So in which case, it is important to kind of go fishing, and we need to find out what that is. And one of the tools, the rubber meets the road tools that we use a lot, is we have very specific homework assignments designed to facilitate each one of those components, each one of those, you know, wants, needs, or pains, or each one of those benefits that you would expect. So, for example, confidence. We have a very specific, very direct confidence-building homework assignment where Johnny does XYZ activity at home. Mom and Dad have to initial off on it to verify that it's been done. And that's what Johnny's doing at home to earn his, you know, uniform in the next class, or to earn his white belt in the next class, or to earn his, you know, attitude stripe, or whatever it is that you, whatever tool you use in your school to help reinforce those values. So now it's not an abstract concept like you were saying. It's a very specific, very direct activity, or a very specific, very direct conception that Johnny has to have in order to be able to accomplish this assignment. And an example could be something like, this isn't exactly what we use, but it's in the same spirit. An example could be something like, Johnny, what I want you to do is, building confidence means that you have to have two things. You have to have the willingness to try new things and the patience to make mistakes. So what I want you to do is go home tonight and try three new things that you've never tried before. If maybe you've never helped Mom dry the dishes off, I want you to try that. You know, check with Mom first to make sure it's okay with her, but give it a try and see what happens. Do you think that you'll get it perfect the first time? No, I bet you wouldn't. So what would we have to do? You know, we'd have to practice it, have patience to make mistakes, and make improvements, right? So anyway, that type of thing. And then Johnny takes that homework assignment home, accomplishes the goals that we set for him, whatever they may be. And when that parent, student, you know, whoever they are, returns for their enrollment conference, they're much more prepped for the benefit that we're talking about, right? Now they know that we have specific tools and specific strategies in our school to help facilitate teaching the benefits that they're enrolling for anyway, right? So I think that's a very impactful tool that anybody can tweak for their school and have some great results with. Master Brown, let's take the next step. So now I'm an enrolled student, and from the point that I'm enrolled to, in some schools, it's as aggressive as 2 to 3 weeks. In some schools, it's as extended as 3 to 12 months. At some stage within that, you know, initial training period, in most schools, I'm now a candidate for some type of a renewal or an upgrade. So in our case, it's within you know, 2 weeks to 2 months of a student's enrollment, they're a likely candidate, or they're on the list of a candidate to be enrolled in either our Master Club or our leadership programs, which really the leadership program now is the core program in all of our in all the Mile High Karate schools. So that's sort of the focus. Now, so take us to the next step. If you're the instructor on the floor, and now I've got a student who is enrolled, he's been in the classes for X period of time, and you can insert your own X in that depending on how your what your school model works like. But now I suddenly become a candidate for renewal. What's the transition? So if I'm an instructor, how do I communicate that transition to the student? You know, now you're a student. By the way, this is something else you should be looking at. How does that sound in the classroom, and what are the functions on that?
Well, really, it is an extension of the trial program, and what I mean by that, you've now got them convinced or believing that they can do the martial arts and they can succeed in the martial arts. Your next step now is not only to get them to feel like they can continue to succeed in the martial arts, but now you've got to get them to set a goal and to see if they can succeed past the period that they're signed up for, whether that's a year program, 6-month program, whatever. You've got to get them to start future pacing and seeing themselves as a black belt, as a second degree, as a third degree. You've now got to give them the stories of other black belts, whether they're current black belts in your school or people you've trained with. And when I say give them the stories, you've got to create it. If that person could do it, there's no reason you couldn't. So the child that was uncoordinated, the MS student, the 40-year-old overweight parent that did it, the kid that was blind, whatever the most extremes are, if they could achieve it, you could achieve it. Give them personal stories about you, about the instructor's training, when they had pitfalls or obstacles or hiccups, how they overcame it, how others overcame the challenges, allowing them or creating venues for them to see the upgraded program, whether it's Master Club, Black Belt Club, leadership team, what have you, giving them an opportunity for them to see them train, see some of the things that they do different, to have the visual differences of the uniforms, having them to want to aspire to be like that, like a member on that team or like their instructor. Translating the features into benefits and letting continue to do that, but also letting them know that there are more features within the upgrade program, so therefore they're going to get more benefits, which in the long run help them. Again, it's continuing to find what those wants, needs, or pains are, and showing them how being part of this upgrade process or upgrade created program, how those can hopefully aid or help in any of those wants, needs, or pains. It's having that working relationship and the rapport with your program director. So as you're talking about a particular piece, whether it's setting goal to be a black belt, that your program director is helping you with tools and communication to those families and those students so they can start doing goal-setting exercises. It's having that rapport with that and that working relationship with that program director. So maybe you're teaching class and that program director only spends, you know, a minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes the most, working with Johnny or the student, spotlighting them, letting them feel that sense of accomplishment. Now, it's got to be a true sense of accomplishment, not a false one, so that they can see if they can achieve more, they can do more, similar to the introductory process. But now the stories are a little more concrete. If that person can do it, you can do it. Now they can see something they've accomplished. So that's the reason it's important for that program director to be able to be able to teach. And again, they don't have to be the dynamic 20-something-year-old athlete. They have to be able to teach and also inspire. Doesn't necessarily have to be the athlete, though. The instructor needs to have the awareness to create tools to anchor that student into the school, into the culture, which is really important. So whether that's and every school has a different culture, and Mile High Christ, it's a success culture, so that's doing the reading assignments, doing the reading, the textbooks and the homework that go along with those reading assignments, doing the weekly homeworks that are assigned at the beginner levels, make sure those are turned in. The first time you say, oh, it's okay you didn't do that, it's okay you didn't memorize this, it's okay you didn't learn that, what you've done is you've devalued the program. And once you've devalued the program, you've devalued the upgrade program, you've actually devalued the whole process they go through. Because it's not, you know, them getting in the program that's the important thing. It's a process they go through to get to it, so that way they can become high-quality students.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, that brings up an interesting point that I didn't make. that it just occurred to me it's important to make. For anyone who doesn't have like an ongoing active working relationship with me or with Stephen Oliver or with Frank Brown or with any of the members of the team, either with NATMA or with Island Karate, something that's extremely important for you to understand is that everything that we're talking about is predicated on the highest quality service, the highest quality student outcomes, and the highest quality technique in black belts. This isn't about, how you can be the next MLM guy. This isn't how you can be the next, used car salesman, right? Now, I've had feedback from, some very short-sighted school owners in some cases who think, oh, you're just all in it for the money. It's all about lining your wallet. It's all about, how much money can you extract from a student. What this is really all about is how we can have the biggest impact on the biggest number of people in our communities, how we can have a school that's, of course, financially successful, but can create something really, really valuable for the student. Now, if I'm teaching out of my garage and I'm charging $20 a month and that's what I like to do as a hobby and that's, my student outcomes and that's my focus and those are my goals, that's great. Now, what we're trying to accomplish isn't that. What we're trying to accomplish is a commercial school. We're trying to accomplish high student value outcomes. I mean, we're trying to accomplish something akin to a military academy or something akin to Harvard. And it's no exaggeration to say that. When you look at the quality and the level of the reading materials that our students have to accomplish during their black belt, when you look at the level of engagement and personal success skills that they have to accomplish to be able to earn a black belt, you would understand. So, don't get me wrong about any of this stuff. It's very important to have certain sales skills. It's very important to have certain marketing skills. But it's all about creating the highest quality student outcomes in the marketplace. And that's what our focus is. So to kind of go back to what you said, as long as we can all understand what the goal is and the level of integrity that we all have to have with this stuff, to go back to what you said is prepping for the renewal is just an extension of what you did as prepping for the enrollment. Number one, making the student feel competent that they can earn a black belt one day. Initially, you were just trying to make them feel competent enough that they could do martial arts at all, right? Because that's the first thing you have to get past. That's the first obstacle is, boy, I don't even know if I can do this. Mom's probably thinking the same thing. Boy, I don't even know if you can do this, right? Once they understand that they can, once they're, a student in your school, now the object is to get them over the hurdle of visualizing themselves being a black belt. So then the second thing is the same as it was before they were a student. It's translating features into benefits so that mom and dad are really excited to have Johnny become a black belt one day too, or to become, or to be in the leadership program or whatever your individual system is. So I think that was very articulate. I think that was very, very good point that it's exactly the same process. But let's talk a little bit more about maybe a nut and a bolt here. So now if I'm trying to accomplish the same two things, now I'm trying to preframe Johnny that he can become a black belt one day. I think you gave some great examples of showing him success stories and things like that. But if maybe you could give me a three-sentence phrase or something like that, some specific phraseology, how would I, in the class as the instructor, communicate the idea to Johnny and to mom and dad?
Well, there's a couple different ways, and I'm going to kind of skew away from your question completely and then come back to it. But part of it's having, we talked about it, both of us, about having tools. And going back to the intro, part of that, the tools that we do at Mile High Karate, and I'm sure many colleges do it, is putting the student in the uniform on the first class. What that does is now they can see themselves as a martial artist. They're going to start and do the experiment. Do several intros without putting them in a uniform and then put them in a uniform and do the intros and see the differences and see the excitement of them not wanting to take it off when they go home. And watch how much more power you'll have of giving them the homework assignment and getting it accomplished. And that carries a lot of weight with the parents. That comes from the instructor and the program director, making that decision and following through with it and all the little nuts and bolts that go along with that. But the same kind of process can work along with the upgrade process. Let them wear a black belt for the class. During a drill, stop and point out the student that is doing something like a black belt. Now, saying like a black belt really doesn't mean anything to anybody who's not a martial artist. But if you clarify it for him, Billy is doing this like a black belt. What that means is he's focused. He's got great posture that demonstrates confidence. He's yelling, which demonstrates confidence. It's really easy to be quiet and be shy, but to be confident, even if you make a mistake and, you know, draw attention to yourself and to try it again, this confidence, you know, yelling is the way that we show that in the martial arts. Doing those pointing out, letting them try the tools, trying on the uniform, the tools of letting them try out a piece of curriculum or a weapon or something of that nature that's not part of their normal level. Those are all ways that you can motivate those students into becoming or wanting to become black belts. Having them do public commitments, have them stand up and tell their peers that they want to be a black belt. One of the tools we have at Mile High Karate is we have a sheet that gets changed out that says future black belt. And if you're serious about it, you go sign it. That's just another tool for them to get a commitment. If mom and dad see them talking about it, mom and dad can see them doing it. If Billy's talking about when I'm a black belt or when I'm in the leadership program, I can do X, Y, and Z, and they keep talking about it, it becomes now a real want, a real desire, and mom and dad can see that. And then mom and dad have no reason to say that they're not serious about it. Mom and dad, you know, as parents, you'll do whatever you can for your children, and you have a tendency to do even more if you find a benefit behind it. So now translating these features into benefits, getting the child excited about it and inspired enough to not only talk about it but take action. Mom, dad, can I please go to that special leadership class? Can I please, you know, can you please fill out this paperwork so I get my invite to leadership? When you have the child working hand-in-hand with the instructor to persuade the parents, that becomes a strong tool right there. I know I veered from your question, but does that kind of answer it in a roundabout way?
No, I think it was perfect. It was probably three or four more things than I, you know, had thought in my mind, but yeah, that's perfect. In fact, let's clarify a little bit on just one point, the last thing you said. There's a certain amount of technique behind getting the students to help persuade the parents, right? Like there's a certain amount of, you know, not having the perception of having, you know, the kid go ask mom for a dollar, right? Or having the kid go, you know, pester mom until she's sick of arguing, right? But there certainly is a lot of value behind having little Johnny clearly and articulately communicate to mom at home why the leadership team might be something that he would like to do, right? And that's something that we have to help teach him in class, right? I mean, that's something that we have to, you know, quote-unquote program him for, right? And this is exactly the same, and there's a lot of value behind that. If you think about the normal Toys R Us, you know, like trip for the family, right? It's, you know, the little guy kicks and screams until he gets what he wants. Well, that's not the environment that we're trying to set up. In fact, we're trying to teach Johnny a much better way to communicate his wants, desires, and needs to mom and dad, right? So just think about that a little bit and roll that model around in your head a little bit. Think about how you can specifically help Johnny learn how to communicate his desires, learn how to communicate what he wants to accomplish in martial arts to mom and dad. And it's a much, much more impactful way to do it than just to say, oh, you know, go, you know, bug your mom about getting that cool uniform, right? Much different culture. Anyway, so moving on, I think that was perfect. And so let's...
Mr. Milroy, before we move on?
Yeah.
You know, we've talked a lot about the instructor in that process, but we didn't talk much about the program director.
I was just going there right now.
The program director in the same process, everything that the instructor is doing on the floor, whether it's telling the personal stories or... Equipping Johnny with the tools and skills on how to effectively articulate that they want to be part of the leadership program, the program director needs to be reiterating that, not only to the student, but to the parents. And the reason I say to the parents, a lot of times you're not a prophet in your own land, so as the instructor, parents will tune you out because they're reading the book, talking on the cell phone, or talking to Mrs. Jones because they haven't seen her in all week. So what the program director needs to be doing is, whether that's 10, 15, 20, 30 seconds with each parent, reiterating what the instructor said, mailing them, emailing them, doing the phone follow-up, setting up the appointments. And this whole renewal process, no matter how much the instructor talks or gets the student to help persuade or sets the goals or the images, without handling the parents through the process, nothing ever happens. And I've seen way too many times where the instructor is very effective, but there's no hand-holding, and then somebody goes and asks him for a large chunk of money, and it falls apart. What ends up having to happen is the program director now has to be, you know, have that good close relationship with the instructor. So when instructor's on step one, the program director knows to have a conversation with Mr. Jones about progress, about here's what we'd like to see change, here's how we're going to do it, what would you like to see change, and then give her you know, an example, show her that you can make the kind of change or have that kind of impact. You know, the proof's in the pudding.
Yeah,
and they need to work hand in hand to make sure that whatever the instructor's covering, the program director's reiterating. Or you can look at the way whatever the instructor or the program director's covering, that the instructor's reiterating on the floor. That way they're getting congruent messages simultaneously. So sometimes it's geared a little more to the child level, and it's going to be, you know, a little more concrete or solid, or even more of a how-to process for the parents.
Exactly. The something you said that is very important is that, again, to kind of go back to what I said a while back, that this is all based on highest quality student outcomes and high level of integrity in your program, is we're not trying to sell all sizzle and no steak, right? We're not trying to make huge promises that we can't fulfill. We are, though, trying to help persuade that person to understand the value of what we do. And I had a conversation the other day. This is a little bit off topic, but I think it's valuable. I had a conversation the other day with a gentleman in the Midwest, you know, very near where I used to live, and was adamant that he wouldn't be able to charge the type of tuition that we command in Mahatma Karate, but also just in many, many, many very successful schools. And he was somewhere around $60 a month, right? And was, you know, was adamant that was the most he could charge in his demographic area. Now, here was the thing. Regardless of what your tuition is, your own perception of your value is the only determining factor. So his mindset was, his comment to me was something like, you know, I've heard, you know, you guys say at one point or another that, it's as valuable as going to school, or it's as valuable as tutoring, like a Sylvan or Kumon or something like that. Probably comparing, you know, tuitions or something like that. But that was the conversation that he remembered. And he said, well, you know, this is just karate. It's, you know, that's what it is. It's not, you know, it's not as important as math or science. Well, I mean, obviously, he's his own limiting factor, right? Obviously, he's the reason that his program is only worth $60 a month. Now, if that's your perception, if your perception is that the values that we teach in martial arts are only as important as, like, teaching, like, kickball, then stick with that and treat it as a hobby and be fine with that. But our perception isn't that, and our program isn't that either. And it's not just the kick and the punch. In fact, that's, you know, very little of the overarching curriculum is the actual physical memorization and stuff like that, right? I mean, there's all sorts of, we do the traditional Junri system and all that, so there's all sorts of you know, forms and self-defense and weapons and all that stuff. But the whole focus of doing any of those components is the character skills that it goes with, so is the character skills that it specifically targets, right? So what I'm trying to say is it's not about trying to sell the sizzle and not have any stake behind it. It's all about having a green belt's parents look through the black belt's parents' eyes and see what they see, feel what they felt, and see the outcomes that they've gotten. So I think that's great. So,
you know, to kind of piggyback off what you said, it's not only see through their eyes and see what they felt and see what they've accomplished. It's not only that. What it's also it's got to be is what's in it for me. And you, as an instructor, that translating features and benefits, you've got to be very clear. And the bigger your student body is, believe it or not, the easier it is to do this, to find what's in it specifically for that individual family. Now, if you want to say the bigger your student body is, the easier it is to find that. Because once you identify it once, you can see the same behaviors, qualities in other students, so you know it boils down to one of 10 things, why they'd want to do it. If you have a student body of 10, you know, it becomes harder because now you've got to really figure out what happens. But the larger student body is, you've probably seen it, experienced it, enough times that you can figure out what's in it for them, so you know exactly what you're talking about. When I say know exactly what you're talking about, if you're talking about how it's going to help with their discipline or their focus or their athleticism, you know exactly what you're talking about for that family. You know how to translate those features into benefits. And when you're getting testimonials, when you're having other people stand up and talk about what they've done, what they've accomplished, why they did it, when you're having parents say why they decided to put their child into the leadership program, you work in an adult program, a predominantly adult program, you have the adult talk about their weight loss or their strength or them actually have to defend themselves, heaven forbid that has to happen. When they're actually talking about that type of stuff, you know exactly, you know, who to have stand up depending on the mass of your audience.
Right, exactly. And you know, you kind of bring a relatively unique perspective to this. Being, you know, the corporate trainer for a national organization now, we've got, you know, literally thousands of students training at any one time in the schools. So you do have that ability to see that on a macro basis. And I think that's exactly right. You'll see the same trends, and you can identify by behaviors. So that's a perfect, you know, barometer. Let's take the next step. So now I've got a student who is, okay, let's take the next step up for a school owner. So now I'm a school owner, and I've got an instructor and I've got a program director. I might be one of them, I might not be one of them, I might be both of them, right? But let's say I have a staff, and I want to take the next step in my career, and I want to start to systemize my school so that I don't have to be the pushing every button every day manually myself and do all the heavy lifting on my own. Obviously, from an enrollment standpoint and a renewal standpoint, the instructors and the program directors are now cooperatively working together to facilitate all that process, right? They're actively engaged in every class of the student's career, helping to focus them on their goals, helping them to focus on fitting within the renewal process somewhere. Talk a little bit about, obviously I need tools to do that. And I would need to have, as an initial tool to help train the staff, I'm going to want some type of a script and a system to help them be focused on communicating those benefits articulately to the parents and communicating the competency to the student. So get a quick, you know, outline of how you would implement that if I'm a school owner now and I want to try to help my program director and my instructor work more cooperatively on this. How would I start to develop that script system and stuff like that?
Well, truth be told, there's not going to be a totally original script.
Exactly.
No matter, you know, if it's the martial arts or I don't know, trying to book a hotel. There's not going to be an original script. So you can go about it one or two ways. One way is you can collaborate with somebody, borrow, what have you, and start the script with the info call down to the enrollment, down to what's said, you know, create the flashcards or the book of rebuttal on, you know, every feature, translating every feature into a benefit. And that's going to be a long, huge headache. But you've got to do it. There's other ways you can get into coaching programs or franchises, what have you, and you know, have it done for you or helped out a lot. But writing a script is much more difficult than teaching your instructor program director how to find that information and becoming a product of the product. And what I mean by that is it's really easy to memorize a script and, you know, have rote memorization. But if they really are doing all the books, the audio sets, the seminars, and they're part of the product, and they can talk the Zig Ziglar, Tony Robbins, Les Brown, and they can actually talk it, and they can actually pull that type of motivational and informational speeches from the back of their minds, they've rehearsed it so much, it becomes much more sincere, it becomes real, and now you're product of the product. So now, if you're a product of the product, your students are going to become products of the product. And now it's not a real big sell system. Does that kind of answer your question, or am I going the wrong direction?
No, that's exactly right. In fact, that's what I was going to bring you back to in a minute, was the dramatic difference between thinking of script versus culture and an internalization. So you said what I didn't expect you to say, but was exactly the next question. So if I'm a school owner now, I've got a choice to make. and my choice is, well, let's say I don't have a choice, but I have a choice in how I implement. The thing that I don't have a choice on is I have to have an outline of the process. I need everybody on my team to know exactly what happens on intro one, exactly what happens on intro two, exactly how the instructor is going to give that student their homework, exactly how they're going to look up and get mom and dad's attention and talk to them about confidence, focus, self-esteem, whatever it is, right? I have to have a script for that. I have to have a system for all that. Now, the problem in the disconnect is, and this is why I wanted to kind of talk about it, with Maximum Impact members and some coaching members in the team, there becomes a great disconnect. When we give the instructors the script, we make them rehearse it, we make them memorize it, and then we sort of set them on their way. And that's the only tool they have. Because the problem is, now they're just regurgitating what they memorized, which is okay. I mean, if it's a choice between that and nothing, I'll take that. But there's another option. And the other option is, has that person been indoctrinated into that culture? Have they internalized that thinking? Not necessarily the word for word, but have they internalized the idea, the concept, and understand it? So like the script that I talked about a while ago. You know, Mrs. Jones, most people don't know this, but from the time a student is you know, born to the time they're 18 years old, they hear the word no 148,000 times. Now, what that tends to do is teach a student what their limitations are, not what their possibilities are, right? Now, that's a script. That's memorized. But I've also internalized that entire message, and I've internalized what that can do for a person's self-esteem, what that can do for a person's goal-setting process, you know, how that works, right? So not only can I regurgitate that script on command if I so desire, but really what's important is I can go over to Mrs. Jones with little Johnny and say, and have a conversation about why, you know, Johnny may be having issues with his self-confidence, why he might be having issues with his self-esteem, and how our program is specifically designed to help with that. So what you said is exactly where I was going. You're just a little ahead of me. Talk a little bit more about that, about how do I take my staff members? And of course, I've already given them the script. I've done all that. They've learned it. They're memorizing it as we speak. How can I indoctrinate them more into the culture of what's going on rather than just have them be robots and regurgitate?
Well, whether it's the audio or the seminars or the actual books or a coach, what have you, to get them to internalize the mindset and that type of culture, you can make it a requirement. And with requirement, there can be consequences, whether that's affected to their job or to their belt promotions or what have you. It can be part of your weekly meetings where you guys talk about it. It should be a point where you're almost like martial arts training. You know, you make it a requirement, then you motivate them to do it, then you inspire them to go do it on their own. So being a good school owner is like being a great, you know, chief instructor on the floor. You've got to teach, motivate, then inspire. And it should be at the point where you're inspiring your instructors and your program directors, that they're coming to you with a new book or audio series or what have you, and letting you know about it.
Yeah, absolutely right. That's exactly what I was talking about. It's not enough to make suggestions. It's not enough, you know, it's not enough to sort of create the culture. And another really good tool is always social proof. And you talked a little bit about that earlier. So if I'm a student and I'm a green belt, it's extremely important for me to be able to see, if I'm a 7-year-old little girl with red hair and pigtails, it's very important for me to be able to see another maybe 8 or 9-year-old girl with red hair and pigtails as a black belt. Right? It's very important that I can see that visually, maybe with a live person in the class, or, you know, with a story about a student who fit that profile, or whatever it is. So all of us are products of social proof, right? We all have certain limitations in our mind and in our psyche, and we can't break past those things unless we envision ourselves in a different way. Almost all obstacles are self-created. And, you know, I hate to admit that I saw this, but I've seen exactly one episode of this show called My Name is Earl. Have you ever seen that show?
You know, season you know one and about. Two.
What's that?
I said I own seasons one and two.
Okay. Well, I'm still embarrassed that I've seen even one episode. But here's the episode that I saw. The episode that I saw was Earl apparently went to prison for some reason, and he's in jail, or prison. And there was a guy in prison who used to beat up Earl or something like that. And again, I've only seen like, you know, three quarters of one episode. But the thing was, there was a guy in jail who Earl convinced to go steal something at some point or break into someone's house when he was real young, like 8 or 9 years old. And the kid was like a Cub Scout, you know, or their version of it, so they didn't get sued for using the word Cub Scout, right? And, you know, pushed him through the window, and the guy got caught, right? The kid got caught. So the kid had a grudge against Earl for the rest of his life. But not only did he have a grudge against Earl for the rest of his life, he was in and out of jail for the rest of his life. Because when he was a little kid, his one and only goal in life when he was 8 years old was to get his, like, eagle patch or something, right, on his Boy Scout uniform. And so he couldn't do that because he got put in, like, a juvenile facility, right? So he could never get that patch. He could never get that next level, right? And anyway, so he ended up in and out of jail because of that one negative experience that kind of stopped him from achieving his goal. And he was in and out of jail, in and out of jail. And then eventually, I think he said something that was extremely impactful, was every time he would get out of jail, he would go commit another crime so that he could go back to jail, because that's all he ever visualized himself, was in, like, the prison oranges, you know, and behind bars. That was his picture of himself. That was his own self-image. And what happened was Earl helped him in jail earn his badge, right, earn his eagle patch. And he left the jail and got out and wearing his uniform, right? So he's a 35-year-old man wearing a Boy Scout uniform, right? So, you know, whatever. But so he was walking down the street and deciding what crime he was going to go commit next to get thrown back in jail. And picked up, I think, a rock and walked over to a car window. And he was ready to smash the car window and steal the car when he saw his reflection in the car window and saw him wearing the uniform that he was so proud of with his eagle badge, or whatever the badge was, right? Wearing the thing that he never visualized himself as. So he didn't break the window. He now saw himself as the Eagle Scout guy, right? Or the Eagle Badge guy. And the Eagle Badge guy doesn't steal cars, right? He does different things. So kind of to loop that back to what we were just talking about, being a product of the product is the self-image of the instructor, has to be the self-image of the instructor. So if they perceive themselves as just a guy out here that can kick and punch and that you know, is trying to sell stuff, right, that's not the self-image that we're trying to create for an instructor. The self-image that we're trying to create for an instructor is someone with, you know, very high levels of self-esteem, self-confidence, has the ability to overcome almost any obstacle that ever happens in their life because they are a product of the culture, right? So the social proof that we use is just that, creating that image for the instructor, just like you would create the image for the student. So what you said is exactly right. Getting those instructors, getting those staff members to become part of that culture is exactly the same set of skills that you use as a martial arts instructor to help that student visualize himself becoming a black belt.
You're exactly right. And kind of leapfrogging off that two different directions. Number one, if you can sincerely, you know, internalize that culture, and you can explain to the parents, and there's no reason to hide anything from the parents, that you know, through years of training, you've learned how to do this, and the reason that it's important is because now if you can, you know, persuade or help their child get on the right path, their child will get those same skills. And now when it's in middle school or high school, when it comes to peer pressure, hopefully their child can be very into peer pressure, and that's positive peer pressure, encouraging their friends not to smoke, to encouraging their friends to study, encouraging their friends to be involved in athletics, versus the negative peer pressure that we always hear about. And if a parent can say, well, you know, he's got my kid really excited about karate from reading these books and being in this environment, and if my kid could get, you know, two or three of his friends really excited about not doing something I don't want him to do, it's definitely worth it. So that's number one of, you know, becoming a product of the product. Number two is, as you get higher price points, Mr. Milroy, you're fully aware of this with Mile High Karate's price points, your typical family changes a little bit. And at the price points that we're at, our typical family, most of those families have read or are familiar with the type of books or speakers that that are useful for creating this goal setting and this type of culture that we're talking about. And they can tell real quick if it's, you know, the dad who's an executive, if you are reading a script or if you've actually read it. And sometimes they'll call you on and ask you questions. So if you like this person, do you like this person? Or did you read this book by this person? If you have no idea what they're talking about, it comes pretty clear pretty quickly that you're transparent. And then I guess everything you've just worked for, you've destroyed in a few seconds. Well, I hope everybody got something out of the call that we had today. I truly do. And again, I guess the most important factor is to remember that selling from the floor really comes down to retention, enrollments, and renewals. And even part of that, we didn't touch much on enrollments from the floor. But if the instructor is being motivating, inspiring, being able to translate features to benefits, that gets people excited. And once you're able to translate those features to benefits, it's not now asking your students to bring in friends, but the parents and the people sitting on the sidelines in a predominantly child environment get extremely excited, and they're more than excited to bring in friends. The moms will go out of their ways to bring in the neighbor boy down the street's parents. And obviously, we all know when working referrals, getting somebody through the doors is an exciting point, but to get their parents through the door is even more exciting, more beneficial.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, good. You know, we're almost out of time. We only have a few minutes left on the line. But let's just kind of wrap up here real quick. So far, what we've got is an instructor and a program director working intimately cooperatively with each other to create the environment on the floor and off the floor that we need to create to stimulate the renewal, to stimulate the enrollment, to stimulate the renewal. And obviously, we've got that means if our instructor is in many cases, you know, young high talent black belt, then he needs to be involved in ongoing sales training on a daily basis as far as it relates to the sales cycle in the school. So he needs to know exactly what's happening in Intro 1, exactly what's happening in Intro 2, exactly what's happening at the enrollment conference, exactly the marketing pieces that are happening for renewal prep, exactly what the program director is going to be hopefully speaking to the parents about during mat chats and things like that, and vice versa. Because
I would even go a little further. You'll see a lot of people use the actual sales training. I'll use Tom Hopkins, for example.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually arguably more important that the instructor knows how to do the Tom Hopkins closes more so than the program director. And what I mean by that, we'll use the puppy dog close where you let them take it home. If the instructor lets the student borrow his nunchuckas or his screamer sticks for the night, you know, we're going to be working this in the leadership program. These are my personals. You can take them home tonight. You know, give them the rules so they're not, you know, smacking their sisters or brothers or what have you, and bring them back to me. You know, just see what it feels like to have a third-degree black belt's weapons, or, you know, use a third-degree black belt's weapons or fourth-degree, whatever the instructor is. That's way more impactful than the program directors letting them, you know, wear the gi home for the night and bringing it back tomorrow. Because now there's a personal feel behind it. The taking it away, if the kid's not behaving or disobeying the parents or what have you, for the instructor to do the, well, you know, Billy, I was going to ask you to join our leadership program, but I can't now because you have done ABC violations, and if you rectify them by doing 1, 2, 3, I may reconsider. That's much more impactful than the program director trying to do a takeaway close for the parents. Mom, Dad, maybe you're the wrong candidates for the program. It's much more impactful if the instructor knows how to do those type of techniques, because, you know, they're the ones who are building the strongest relationship with the student. And they can have the impact that the program director, the parents, a lot of times the teachers can't, the elementary school and middle school teachers can't have with that student.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's always the, how do I say, the litmus test, but a great test of where your floor is at is what the sale environment looks like. And if it's literally, if you've got the guy in the enrollment office who's got to bring out the sheet of paper and do the, you know, Benjamin Franklin close, or the guy that's got to, you know, use those type of techniques, if that's happening, you know, if that's happening on a regular basis, then really the weakness is on the floor, not in the sales room. And without fixing the floor problem, the sales room problem continues to escalate. So there's no room for, you know, being the used car salesman guy in our thing, because frankly, it's very easy to, you know, the best way to kill a bad movie is with good marketing, right? When everybody goes and sees it and they figure out how much it sucks and they tell all their friends it sucks, right? Well, same thing. If we're only selling the sizzle and we don't have the steak, or if we're in the office trying to pull out all of the, you know, greasy used car salesman closing techniques that may or may not be effective anyway, to just get deals done, it doesn't take long for people to figure that out, right? So definitely the culture has to be, you know, this is the selection process for the student to become a student, and you guys are here, we need you to be here, and that's the next step in the process, that type of thing. So we've got the instructor and the program director working in a cooperative way on that stuff now. And as a school owner, now we're creating those tools and systems by scripting, and then also by externally facilitating, you know, knowledge to them so that they can become products of the products or parts of the culture rather than just regurgitating stuff, which, you know, like I said, don't get me wrong, if it's a, you know, 18-year-old, 17-year-old, high-talent black belt instructor, part-time guy who's out there teaching a green belt class, there's nothing in the world wrong with him flipping out a script or flipping out the words of the week in the NATMA box, or flipping out, you know, whatever it is that you've prepared for them and reading it off the paper. Nothing wrong with that. But what's much more impactful is for him to be able to speak in an articulate, spontaneous manner about that type of a skill or that type of a character trait without having to do that. So it's not a problem starting on a script. It's nothing against that. But what it is many schools disconnect and they think that that's the solution, when that's just one of the tools to create a solution. So that's where we're at. So I think that's pretty comprehensive. I think that's pretty robust. Now, without getting into any details, let me just do an outline here real quick. And obviously in the Maharati model, in many other very successful models too, but obviously with the depth of the marketing background that we have to draw from, all of these systems, all of these activities that the instructor and the program director are cooperatively working with the student through is all supported by extreme marketing measures. So we're talking about extensive direct mail campaigns to the students, explaining to them the same things that the instructor explained in class, explaining in the same empathetic manner that the program director would be explaining it external to the class. Email, voice broadcasting, broadcast fax, flyers in the class, personal notes from the instructor, good job notes from the instructor or from whoever worked with Johnny that day, specific homework assignments that are focused on what the student's wants, needs, and goals are, right? That are, you know, on a regular basis followed up within the classroom. So all of these internal manual systems are supported by external marketing systems as well, including, in our case, driving them to a web page where they watch a video and they answer questions and they opt in, things like that. Driving them to a series of teleconferences that inform them in very clear terms about what they should be expecting, what they should be accomplishing in class, what the future looks like for them, what opportunities exist for them, and things like that. So very robust marketing component to support all the stuff that you're doing in the classroom. Now, let's just create one more cautionary warning for everyone that's thinking this way. It's extremely important, and it does wonders for ratios to support everything you're doing on the floor with extreme marketing measures like I'm talking about. But the second never, ever, ever replaces the first. And what happens in a lot of cases, we've seen this with quite a few coaching clients and a good number of, let me switch that around, a few coaching clients and quite a few Maximum Impact members at NAPMA, is they start to integrate these marketing measures. They start to integrate, you know, a weekly email to the students or a sequential email campaign to the students that is prepping them for the renewal. They start to integrate direct mail steps. They start to integrate postcards, long-form letters. They start to integrate voice broadcasting, faxing. They start to integrate homework assignments mailed home. They start to integrate all these systems and then take their focus off everything that's happening on the floor. So the marketing systems are only designed to create an environment But until you go up and tap someone on the shoulder, or until you give Johnny, you know, your ninjutsu to take home or something like that, until you create something in the classroom, nothing happens, nothing moves. So can you give us a little perspective on that, Master Brown? I know you've seen this a lot, too. How do I avoid falling into that trap?
Loaded question.
It's a very loaded question.
Can you give me a little more guidelines so I don't stray too far?
Okay. So if I'm, this is like level 5 now, so I've accomplished level 1, 2, and 3, and 4, and now I'm integrating, you know, some extreme marketing steps to help facilitate the environment for the renewal. What are the pitfalls? What do I have to, how do I implement that so that I don't take focus away from what I'm doing in the classroom, or that I don't, like, forget to have the instructors, you know, use those type of persuasive stories or social proof stories or visualization exercises in class? How do I make sure that all that happens at the same time?
You know, truth be told, it's got to become systemized. So you know that every day that they're going to have the stump speech, and the stump speech obviously is going to be for the character development or social skills, what have you. But it also relates to setting a goal to black belt and following through to black belt. You also have got to be very aware of what audience you're catering to. So part of that in the Mind Like Karate system is we use the attendance cards, and we make notes in the attendance cards. We know by class 1 they've received this type of information, and by class 8 they've received this assignment and this information. So you've got to be aware of that type of scenario. But the way you keep from falling in the pitfalls is you know, I guess on an individual basis, and this is part of the program director's responsibility to keep the instructor abreast of what's going on, but you know, class 1, you're doing A, B, and C, class 2, 1, and 2, D and F, class 3, steps 3 and 4 on class number next, but you have that kind of system, and they need to be communicating during class. So as the instructor's teaching class, the program director needs to be able to walk out on the floor and say, we need to do this, this, and this with these three people, and this with these two people. And by the way, look at the discrepancy in classes. If people are about to drop out, you know, you want to make sure that you really spotlight them and get them excited and get them moving. And by the way, Mrs. Jones right here, this is her kid. He's brought in 7 friends. Why don't you make a big deal of that and get other people to bring in friends? So it's kind of got to be like that communication, because when you're on the floor and you're the instructor, there's so many things that are going on, and you know you have your class plan, which you need to teach, but you also have 30 other crises going on because Mrs. Jones and the other 10 kids in class are talking about it, and somebody just, you know, banged their toe, and somebody else is freaked out because they lost their belt. So you need somebody else who's not in the middle of the action all the time just to come up there and you know, give you a fresh perspective, and that allows you to keep your renewal process going straight. Is that what you're looking for?
Absolutely, absolutely. That's exactly right. It's just Herculean systematic effort that, you know, you cannot substitute with anything. You know, it's not, what we've seen a lot of, you know, a good number of school owners kind of do is when they start integrating these sophisticated marketing systems internal to their school, not necessarily talking about external prospects, but, you know, inside, you know, renewal candidates and things like that, is they completely take their eye off the ball. And they think that emails, direct mail, voice broadcasting, faxing, and all that stuff replaces making that personal connection from the instructor to the student and from the instructor to the student to the parent. And it's absolutely the opposite. So it only enhances that. It can't replace it. So I think that was exactly right. Well, Master Brown, I think we've been pretty comprehensive and pretty thorough. I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for coming on with us. You know, we just don't even have time to open up for questions. We've got like 2 minutes left on the line. So I guess we'll have to leave it at that. So thank you so much for your time today, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And I know all the members will appreciate the insights. And I know we'll speak really soon.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you,
sir.